The Man Booker Prize is renowned for throwing up surprises, and this year was no exception. Elmet is the debut novel from 27-year-old Fiona Moseley. It hadn't even been published when it joined the long list. It's a haunting tale set in rural Yorkshire, full of natural imagery, folklore, and the threat of violence. I read it in a single sitting and had the pleasure of interviewing Fiona down the line from her home near York. So, Fiona Moseley, welcome to Read On Air.
Thank you. Lovely to be here.
For those who haven't read Elmet yet, can you tell us a little bit about the background and the plot?
Yeah, so it's about a family living on the margins of society in the West Riding of Yorkshire. And they build a house for themselves on land they don't own. They don't have a home, so they build themselves one, and they live off the land, and they hunt, and they fish, and they forage, and live a sort of self-sufficient lifestyle. But then the local landowners get a hint of what they're doing, and they sort of try to kick them off the land, and the local community rallies behind them. And this conflict goes on for a while, and then it comes to a dramatic climax, which I won't give away.
It certainly is a very dramatic climax, and it's certainly not a disappointing read at all. It kept me gripped. It's not often I'll read a book in a day, but...
I'm glad.
And actually, there is a rather a sense of the Wild West Ridings about it. It's got a bit of a Western feel, hasn't it?
Yeah, I deliberately set out to do something like that. I mean, I'm very influenced by Westerns. I grew up watching them and reading them, and yes, it's a dispute over a piece of land, which is a classic theme for a Western, and there are sort of, you know, hard men pitted against each other. It's about individuals versus communities, individuals and communities both in relationship to the landscape and the natural world, and then there's a showdown at the end, so it is a Western, really, just in West Yorkshire.
And also the aspect of the character Daddy, who is a bare-knuckle fighter, a hard man, but who doesn't want to be anybody else's man. He wants to be himself. And yet, in some ways, he's a commodity to other people around him, isn't he?
Yeah, I definitely wanted to explore that. I mean, his thing is that he's incredibly large. He's, you know, probably huge and extremely strong. And he's looking just for ownership over his own body, I suppose. You know, his muscles are being used by other people to do their dirty work, and his one concern, I suppose, is that he just, you know, he has control over what he does and control over his strengths and things. So that's his personal struggle, I suppose, in the book.
And he's removed his two young children, Daniel, who's the narrator, and Kathy, who's Daniel's slightly older sister, to the margins of society to protect them from the dark aspects of society.
He's got he's faced with a terrible problem, really, I suppose, because he has his own way in the world, and he's very strong, and he has these two children who he loves very much, and he doesn't quite understand how they could possibly survive without his strength. So his solution is to take them away somewhere and try and kind of build their resilience. And I mean, that has mixed outcomes, I suppose. But it is very much the story of a father wanting to protect his children and not necessarily realizing that he has to let them find their own path and their own way in the world.
One aspect that I loved about the book is that, with the exception of cars and the train line, which figure in the book, actually it could be set any time in the last 250 years. There are no mobile phones, no modern communications.
Yeah, definitely. I wanted to keep it kind of timeless. And also, I mean, I didn't know how long it was going to take me to finish it. And technology changes so much that you can almost find yourself being out of date by the time you finish a novel. You know, you might have mentioned something at the beginning that is suddenly irrelevant at the end, and I didn't want to do that. And also, you know, I was living in London at the time when I started writing it, and I it really was an escape to rural Yorkshire and sort of the landscape I grew up in. And I didn't want that to be polluted by too many mobile phones and laptops and televisions. So it's kind of free from all that, and their pastimes include, you know, sort of making furniture from the wood around and building their house.
I believe you actually wrote part, if not all, of the book on your phone when you were commuting backwards and forwards to London.
Yeah, so ironically, yeah. I did a little bit that way. So I started it when I'd been visiting York, which is where my parents live, and I was on the train back down to London early in the morning, and I started it then, and my mobile phone happened to be what I had at hand. Most of the novel was then written on you know, pen and paper or on a laptop, as is normal, but I would occasionally jot down ideas on my phone, although phones don't feature in the book, as you say.
The book is also steeped in folklore and history and the sense that the landscape is older than the humans around it and will probably outlive us too. You're studying medieval history as well, I believe, at the moment.
Yes, I am. I'm doing a PhD in medieval history. It's a cross between history and literature that I'm doing. And a lot of that seeped into Elmet. I mean, the very name of the book, Elmet, that comes from it was the name for the old Celtic kingdom that existed in that part of the world. I suppose that I wanted to give it that name to show that the boundaries of the landscape have not always been the same, and they will not always go on to be the same. So I wanted to give the land a sense of timelessness and antiquity, and have this sort of very, very local story, which doesn't span a great long period of time or anything, but it's fixed within a place which is much older.
And it's a gripping tale. I also sense a bit of anger that has spurred you to write the tale as well. There's the dispossession aspect, the fact that everything is owned and commoditized for certain people.
Yeah.
Am I right in picking that out?
Definitely, there is a political aspect to the novel. You know, this family build a house themselves on land they don't own, and the land is being used by anyone, and they use it well, they use it responsibly. So, you know, therefore, what's the problem? But the problem, of course, is that it sets a precedent, and so the landowners can't allow it to happen. And there are all sorts of other people in the local community who are having issues with home ownership and rising rents and things. So, yeah, that was something that I wanted to explore. I wanted to question the ownership of large pieces of land that aren't used or aren't used responsibly.
RNIB members get access to all the shortlisted entries in Braille, large print and audio book. I listened to the audio book, which, as I say, is gripping, and I did nothing else for the entire day. Have you heard the audio book yourself?
I've heard a clip of the man who's reading it, and he has a very lovely Yorkshire accent. But I've not listened to the whole thing yet, but I would really like to. I think it would be really exciting to hear my own book in read by somebody else and hear their inflections and what they emphasise and things. I think that would be quite an interesting thing to do.
But you must be delighted that your book is reaching such a wide audience of people who might not be able to see it or access it in another way.
Yeah, I'm really, really pleased, actually. I think it's wonderful that books can be consumed in all sorts of different formats now, either on the printed page or in Braille format, or with audio books. And I suppose the point of fiction is that it does transport things that first existed in my mind into the minds of others, and that's into their imaginations, and that's a really wonderful aspect of it.